Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, a little soft entrance here tonight as the music decided not to work at the last second, so that's always good. But anyways, welcome to the 167th episode of the Joe Mays and JRAP Show. I'm one of your hosts, Joe Mays, and besides having Justin Rapoff here as my co-host, we also have, I think for the first time in 2 years, I think we missed last year, we have our quote-unquote basketball analyst here with us this evening, and Mr. Adam Filer. He's been with us multiple times before. In addition to basketball, I think he was also here for one of our Super Bowl shows. So he's been on a couple times. We're glad to have him back here with us this evening. We've got a lot to talk about in the NFL and free agency. But obviously today the biggest thing going on is March Madness selections. And we're going to get to that. So just take a moment here and say welcome to the show again, Adam. It's good to have you.
Good to be here. I remember subbing for Justin the one time, but that was a little while ago.
Yeah, it has been some time since we've been able to get you on the show, but it's good to have you back here because collectively the basketball knowledge in this room is pretty much limited to just you. Justin and I, we could kind of BS our way through it, I'm sure, and just kind of go off what's on the screen, but it's definitely a lot better.
Kind of what we do every week.
Well, yeah, you're right about that.
Just to a greater degree.
Exactly. But it's nice to have someone who actually pays attention to not just, one specific team in college basketball, but what's going on at large. And it's nice to have your viewpoints as we get everyone ready for March Madness, the men's tournament here. And we have a lot of people who don't watch any basketball year and will watch, these next at least 2 weeks, if not, the next three or four as we crown a national champion. But the next 2 weeks are kind of the biggest part of college basketball season, because it gets pretty much everyone, whether or not you even like sports, to do a bracket. There's people that I know have no interest in sports, but still, it's just kind of something fun to do.
Yeah, and I know people who fill out the brackets who don't watch a single game. They just kind of like follow along and check to see how their bracket is doing, but they're not at all interested in the games.
And they're usually people that win, right?
Yeah, they do a lot better than I do. Yeah, which doesn't mean they necessarily win. You can do a lot better than I do and still not win.
Right. So this evening we're going to talk NFL free agency and also March Madness, which if you're watching us on Ustream, I have the live CBS show going on, so you can watch some of the selections as they're happening. Of course, you have to listen to us talk over top of them. But we will get to all of the March Madness stuff in a few minutes. But first up, I do want to mention that this is an interactive show. We love to have your take on – ooh, that's not good. We'd love to have your take on things, and Justin is going to have that information for you.
All right, yeah, we'd love to have your take. We're going to talk about a couple different things. We'll talk on NFL stuff, and then definitely spend a bunch of time on basketball as well, specifically the March Madness, and kind of leading into that. We'd love to have your take. You can call the Mays Sandwich Shop hotline at 530-563-6297. Again, 530-563-6297. You can also email the show at joemaysandjraph@gmail.com. Again, joemaysandjraph@gmail.com. We're also all over social media, and Joey will tell you about that.
Yeah, we have a huge presence on Facebook and Twitter. We actively monitor both of those throughout the show. So if you have questions, comments, anything about NFL free agency or March Madness going on this evening, hit us up on the Facebook fan page or on the Twitter page at Joe Mays and JRAP.
And I'm sure we'll be sending out information I think it already went out regarding contests. We'll talk more about it later in the episode, but we'll be sending stuff out over social media. So keep an eye out there, and you can get to go, you can get to where you need to get into the contest.
Yeah, you're correct though. I did put it out right before the episode started. I reopened the ESPN tournament challenge. If you'd like to join our group, you can find the info on our Facebook page or my personal Facebook page as well. I think the link was sent out as Twitter, on Twitter as well. You can join that group. by clicking on the link and then entering the group password, which for some reason was reactivated from last year. So the password is the same as it was in 2014, which apparently was the same as in 2013 because it's PSU, all lowercase, 2013. So PSU 2013 is the password again for this year's bracket challenge. We get usually about 40 or so brackets, you know, 30, 35 people, 40 plus brackets entered. It's always a lot of fun. And, you know, you really don't have to have any basketball intelligence at all. You just have to do whatever. I mean, we know who've won in the past. My sister's won. You know, she doesn't watch any college basketball at all. Our dads have both won. And while, you know, they watch more than my sister, I can't say that. I won't speak for your dad, but I would think it was probably similar. I'm not sure how much college basketball they watched until March.
Not a ton, no.
Right. And last year, Ryan Yanchosik won. I wasn't able to track him down to get him on the show, but you know, it just, if you just have fun with this, you never know what can happen. And if you win the challenge through our show, you get a free show t-shirt and the opportunity to come on the show and discuss a sports topic of your choosing. So check the Facebook page and join our group, and hopefully we can get upwards of 50 brackets like the last few years.
Yeah, that'll be great. And usually we've gotten some, like, as you say, like, when people can come on the show and pick the topic, that kind of worries me, depending on who would win. You know, I really don't want to do a show, and I think this may lead into a listener email we have. I don't want to do a show on the greatness of Tom Brady. So,
yeah, actually, we do have an email this evening, which we're going to discuss right now, and it is from Rich in East Bridgewater, Massachusetts, or as he calls it, the home of the Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. And he's going to help us link into our first topic, which is the NFL free agency and some trades. So Rich starts off, Justin and Joey, I can't wait to hear your show tonight with all that's going on. I have to hear it live because, as you know, I was on vacation the day after my beloved Patriots won the Super Bowl, and I couldn't wait to hear what you guys had to say when I got back. As luck would have it, or Justin erased it, the second half of the recorded show was gone. Anyway,
hey,
I know that.
Hey, funny that a Patriots fan would bring up missing recording videos. You know,
coincidence. Anyway, I know that it is Selection Sunday and you will be having your March Madness contest, and just about everybody will be picking Kentucky, except maybe my brother Bob, who thinks Villanova has a chance. But can you believe what is happening in the NFL? Most of it revolves around our teams or the NFC East. So first, the easiest East, the AFC. Joey's team, the Miami Dolphins, sign in Damacon Sue. Darrell Revis goes home to the New York Jets. And LeSean McCoy gets traded to the Buffalo Bills, all to catch up to my Patriots. Then the NFC East, brother Bill's team, the Dallas Cowboys, loses DeMarco Murray, who of all teams, Justin's Eagles. So with all of these changes, what is Chip Kelly doing? Looking forward to your show, Rich, from the home of the Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. So, yeah, first topic of the evening, NFL, which, you know, we talk about pretty much every show. We try to put in a little bit of NFL talk. Tonight, we're talking the NFL free agency because that has dominated the headlines this last week just because of how crazy it's kind of been. And it hasn't so much been the free agency with the guys that are available. No. It's been the trades, which has not been in the marquee NFL thing. Usually trades are left to baseball, hockey, and to
right.
a lesser extent.
You don't see big name guys
right.
getting traded in the NFL. It just doesn't happen.
Baseball, hockey, basketball, NBA, NHL, MLB, they have those kind of big multi-team trades and big marquee players. NFL, not that often. It happens, but not as much as it happens in the other three professional leagues. Well, that kind of changed on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Now, we heard about one or two of them leading up to it, one of them being the LeSean McCoy trade, which we'll touch on in a little bit. But let's start first with the free agency in general, some of the big names that have changed teams and the ridiculous amount of money that they have been getting. Then we'll focus on the Eagles and mention LeSean McCoy among the other trades happening in the NFL. So in NFL free agency, the biggest name on the market this year was Lions defensive tackle and Damacon Sue, and coincidentally enough, he ends up signing with my team. So pretty crazy. I did not expect it 2 weeks ago. A week ago when it was breaking, I was on a bus on my way home from New York.
trying not to freak out.
The Dolphins signed, you know, easily a top three defensive player in the league right now. Arguably number one, probably with J.J. Watt, or one of those two will probably take the title, at least over the last few seasons. He's been the most dominant defensive tackle in the league for at least the last two or three years, and he's been extremely productive in all 5 years in the league. He got a ridiculous deal from the Dolphins to the tune of 6 years, $114 million, with just about $60 million of that guaranteed. And the guaranteed money is pretty much all you should focus on, because no matter what happens,
outside of guaranteed money, NFL contracts mean nothing.
And guaranteed is, that's 99% guaranteed. That 1% is if you pull Aaron Hernandez or if you retire early.
Right.
You know, they can come after some of that signing bonus and guaranteed money for you to return it. But the $114 million kind of means nothing unless he'd actually play out all 6 years without ever restructuring. What you have to focus on is the guaranteed money, and we're going to run through a few of the contracts here, and then when we talk about the Eagles as well. But yeah, $60 million guaranteed, crazy. This is a crazy number.
Yeah, for a defensive tackle.
Right, but
I did hear this crazy thing. Ndamukong Suh's dad, 5'8".
That's nuts.
He's like 6'4", 315 ish, right around there.
Big dude.
I guess his great grandfather was like 7'3".
7'3" to 5'8".
Right. Oh my gosh. They said, so you've got, you know, some crazy genetics at play in that family. So, that is literally and figuratively a big addition for the Dolphins. I'm interested to see how it plays out in affecting the other aspects of the defense. You know, if you can shore up the running defense and some of the pass defense, you know, because if he's going to take two offensive linemen to block him every time, or he's demanding that the running back stay in to chip on him, or, you know, whatever, now all of a sudden that changes things for some already pretty good, or if not great, pass rushers that the Dolphins have.
Right. And that's the thing. I don't want to focus on one player too much, but being on my team, I'll take a few more minutes here. Adding Sue is crazy because the Dolphins had probably an undervalued, underrated defensive line before he joined. Now, they jettisoned Odrick. He was a free agent. He signed with Jacksonville, who we'll talk about in a second. But they cut Randy Starks, related to the Sue deal. But they had Earl Mitchell, who's a fine guy, paired next to Sue, fine. But it's the Dolphins' defensive ends now that you have to worry about, because if you have to double-team Sue, that just means that Cameron Wake and Olivier Vernon,
who have already proven themselves to be solid without a star defensive tackle hogging up blocks in the middle.
Now, essentially, those four guys, Wake, Mitchell, Sue, and Vernon, you have to block them with, at a minimum, five guys, quite possibly six. So now you have six guys to block those four. That creates a lot of problems for offense.
It opens
yourself to gameplay.
It gives you a lot to kind of use to defend in the back side there against, you know, the likes of Tom Brady, who are going to be trying to pass on that defense and probably pass quickly, to not have Tom Brady sitting back there.
Now you probably have one last person going out for a route. You have five linemen keeping a tight end or keeping a back, not going out on a passing route. Also, the Dolphins don't have to send pressure. You don't have to send a linebacker.
It allows you to double team some of those other guys in the backfield. Gronkowski, when he comes out, who needs two defenders on him. If it works out and they can get the pressure that they anticipate from this, you know, great defensive line can hide, you know,
deficiencies elsewhere
in the backfield. So I think that's not that they have gaping deficiencies, but I think
They're there. They have a lot to address.
A few years ago, they had great secondary and really not much up front. Cameron Wake was a pleasant surprise for them coming out of CFL. Now, I know that's going back a few years now, but at the same time, now it's kind of shifted, and up front on defense, they're much better, we anticipate them to be much better. And in the backfield on defense, a little bit of an unknown right now.
Right. Now, speaking of defensive backfield, the rival
money,
New England Patriots lost one of the best, if not the best, corner in the league, always up for debate, but he certainly thinks so. He's bet on himself a couple times now, and he's won every time. He leaves New England to go back to the Jets, who he played for just 3 years ago. He signed a 5-year, $70 million deal with $39 million guaranteed. Nothing like, addition by subtraction or a double. You know, we talk about all the time, you know, if you take something away from your division, that's plus one and minus one.
Right.
So it's really, you got two.
It's like winning divisional games, it's a two-game swing. Here, it's a two-player swing. you had the best team in your division lose arguably their best defensive player.
Quite possibly.
And possibly the best defensive player in the league in the backfield.
At least in the secondary.
And you gained him. You know, so like that's a super, not just regular players, but a team lost a superstar, you gained a superstar. That can be big. Now, you know, a lot of guaranteed money, $39 million guaranteed for a cornerback.
Who's going to be 30 this year.
Now, in all fairness, you know, with Todd Bowles going to the Jets, he likes to play aggressive defense, and you need guys that can just go lock up one-on-one and shut a guy down. And that's what they need to do. And Revis, to this point, has proven he's able to do that. Yep. So, and he creates favorable matchups on the other side, because if you do need to rotate help, you usually don't need to rotate it to his side.
Yeah, and the Jets actually completely revamped their defensive backfield over the last 2 years. Last year, they drafted Calvin Pryor to play strong safety. They added upgraded the free safety position. I can't remember off the top of my head what free safety they added. But besides Revis, they also welcomed back Antonio Cromartie.
Right.
So they've definitely have a different look in the defensive secondary.
A different Jets. Same look.
Yeah, kind of. Welcome to 2013 or 2012.
The new old Jets.
Right. The new Jets, the same as the old Jets, at least I hope so.
But in all fairness, it's the same from the Jets, not like the last couple of years, but a few years before that, where their defense was really good.
They'll have a good defense. They'll have a solid receiving core.
A lot of people
core.
Say, like, have they done – well, who'd they get? What receiver? Oh, they got
Brandon Marshall.
So, offensively, they still need somebody to get their playmakers the ball. So, some question marks there still.
All right, we're going to run down a couple of the big signings before we move on to the Eagles and run down the trades, and then finally get to talk a little bit of basketball here. But first, some of the other big deals that happened were former Broncos tight end Julius Thomas signed with the Jaguars. 5 years, he got $24 million guaranteed.
Somebody said he left Peyton Manning to go to the Jaguars, the last big contract he'll ever sign.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it is all about the money.
In all fairness,
though, whatever.
Like, and I've said this, I think it's basically like, look, if money's not going to be that close, like if Peyton Manning had like more than a year or two left, possibly 1 year left, you know, I think Julius Thomas may stay, but he doesn't. And we saw that kind of at the end of this year. You know, he may be able to regroup and have a solid year next year, but if he retires after next year, then Julius Thomas is stuck there and Denver's rebuilding.
Right.
It's going to be a complete rebuild in Denver when Manning leaves. And they may not think that, and they may not try to have it that way, but it's going to fall apart quick, and they're not going to get the free agents that they were getting, and I think they're starting to see that already.
I thought I heard Denver was offering $7-8 million a year for Thomas, and he was able to get a little over $9 million, so it looks like he was looking towards
in Florida,
the future,
where there's no state,
right? So he's actually going to end up getting more staying with Florida. Miami defensive tackle Jared Odrick, former Penn Stater, actually from Lancaster County, moves up north in Florida to the Jaguars. He signs a 5-year deal, $22 million guaranteed.
Jaguars are real players in free agency.
They have to be. A lot of people talk has been happening that as of, I think, the start of league year next year, at some point in the beginning of the 2016 league year, there was a minimum cash that every team had to spend, and there's a lot of teams that aren't close to it. So they have to be active this year and next year to get to that. The Ravens lost speedy wide receiver Torrey Smith to the 49ers, 5 years, $22 million guaranteed. And the Texans cut long time, I think 13-year wide receiver Andre Johnson. He quickly signed a 3-year deal with
Again,
the Colts.
Another superstar going to a team you're trying to catch. That's tough. You know, the Texans are trying to catch up to the Colts. Texans, I think, did a little better than some people expected last year. But now you added Andre Johnson with a quarterback of Andrew Luck. You know, I think if there's any way he's going to, you know, kind of revive and get a couple more solid years left, you know, our output going to the Colts is a perfect spot for him.
Yep.
With the speed of T.Y. Hilton and Dante Moncrief.
Exactly.
Yeah, and as well. An actual running game now too.
Right.
You know, like the Colts.
And another
Colts
year of Andrew Luck,
right.
Another year
the Colts,
in the system.
I think the Colts made out really well in free agency. They got Trent Cole to kind of be a pass rusher, or just a pure pass rusher again. Like, that's what he did so well in Philadelphia.
That could be a nice 1-2 punch at running back, like you were saying, with
Gore
and Heron.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Colts made some major upgrades, and I like what they did in free agency. Without really pulling off many trades there, I don't think there were really trades. Those were all free agents.
Yeah, those are all free agents.
Right.
All right, Philadelphia. Now, we'll run through this and then talk a few minutes about a few of the significant things that happened. First off, they resigned two of their own that they probably needed to resign. Brandon Graham, despite having maybe, I don't want to say limited snaps, but in the rotation, he was probably one of their better defenders when he was on the field. They resigned him, I think, a four-year deal. They also gave Mark Sanchez backup quarterback money, two-year deal, a couple million dollars, which is fine.
I'm fine with
he
that.
Played okay in relief. He's not a absolutely. Starter, but for right. what he did, I have no problem with that.
Right. He managed it and gave him a chance to win some games. You know what? That's all you can really ask from a backup quarterback. And I think last year when he had a chance to kind of prove himself in a system where quarterbacks really should be able to prove themselves, he proved himself to be a reliable backup, in my opinion. And I think, you know what, that's a heck of a position, you know, because you never know. And we'll talk about it with the Eagles. You definitely don't know with the Eagles when they may need to call on Mark Sanchez this
yeah.
coming year. So.
All right, and then a couple of their signings. They gave cornerback Byron Maxwell a six-year deal with $25.5 million guaranteed. Now, essentially, if you're looking at it, if you use the higher-level metrics, which we talked about 2 weeks ago, Maxwell was essentially the same player as Kerry Williams. And when you look at it, Kerry Williams ended up in Seattle. It's almost as if the Eagles traded Kerry Williams for Byron Maxwell. We'll but see
in
what direction
of, right,
this
I think
goes.
Kerry Williams didn't do himself any favors.
He talked
and
too
I think,
much.
Right, and I think – I think what it basically came down to was, you know, if we're going to pay a cornerback, if it's going to be Kerry Williams or Byron Maxwell, we're going to pay Byron Maxwell because imagine this, the Seattle player being more of the team player, at least vocally, or at least to the media, you know, and things like that. Like, he wasn't the major loudmouth in Seattle, which has plenty, you know, and they got another one with Kerry Williams.
Yeah.
And he was okay. I think the problem was Kerry Williams – at times was asked to be a number one, and many times he was paired up with the number two, you know, like because they
put a four
Fletcher on him, and he was god awful, and it didn't. He had a lot of moments where he wasn't getting it done, and he ran his mouth, so he kind of put the target on his back.
Right.
So every time something went wrong for him, like it was kind of magnified because he, in other areas, put the target on his back.
They completely made over at least their starting cornerback duo from – they went from Kerry Williams and Bradley Fletcher to Byron Maxwell, and they also signed Walter Thurman to a one-year deal. Walter Thurman is a former Oregon Duck, just
right.
to throw that out there.
And another former Seattle player. Too.
Correct. He was in the Giants at the Giants for a year, but did
right,
spend
right,
the
right.
first
yeah,
two
yeah.
years of his career in Seattle. Then probably the one – of all the Eagles things that happened, this one they probably liked the most on the surface just because – again, you know, it's one of those take away a player, add a player, you know, it's a double win on the surface. The Eagles signed former Cowboys running back DeMarco Murray, who had an incredible year this season for the Cowboys. They signed him to a five-year deal with $21 million guaranteed. I don't like it.
I don't like it
because of the years for certain.
Right. But when I look at it this way, and again, this is trying to be optimistic about it because it's been up and down. And I tried to stay level with all these moves the Eagles were doing. It's stuff they did this week. But anyway, signing him, like, part of it is you took him away from the Cowboys. So if you're going to pay a little bit more to take him away from the Cowboys, I'm okay with that. But the guaranteed money, I'm okay where the guaranteed money's at. The years might be a little bit of an issue. But I think you know, a lot of people are talking about they're worried about that he's going to wear down. You know, I think his touches are going to be limited, you know, not like benching, but they're going to have like a heck
of
a running back.
He's not
going
to have to carry it 400 times.
Right. They said last year the Eagles had four tight ends, three running backs. They're almost guaranteed to have four running backs and three tight ends this year.
Especially since they released Casey.
Right. You know, and so I can see it definitely kind of staying in that mode. And, you know, I'd be surprised if he has – I'd be shocked if he had 300 touches this year, you know, including.
You got to think with Sproles and Polk plus
right.
another guy we got to
right.
talk about.
Right. And I kind of like this because with the other things we're going to talk about, Sproles is going to have more of a chance to be less of the change of pace running back and more of, I mean, he'll still be a running back, but out and out receiver.
OW,
kind of like
offensive
the, right,
weapon.
Right. He was kind of like, when you're handing the ball off to him, he can get big, you know, he can get big chunks, and he did last year. But, you know, I like the threat of lining him up in the backfield and then, you know, you split him out to the slot or something like that. Chip Kelly, he is kind of crazy, but is he, like, crazy smart or is he just crazy? And we're going to have to wait and see, which is going to be. However, and I'll talk about this more kind of when we talk about some of these trades. A lot of people, I think, are like were at least jumping off the bridge and like panicking. I'm like, what are they afraid of? When Chip Kelly took over this team, they were 4-12. They're a 4-12 team that hasn't won a playoff game since 2008. If you're going to do it, and they talk about this all the time, head coaches, they talk like Herm Edwards, all those guys.
Do it
like,
your way.
Do it your way because you're going to get fired one way or the other.
Right.
Right. Andy Reid did it his way, you know, and
he stayed there for 14 seasons. It was successful,
and then it ran out, and he was gone. Chip Kelly, this is your first shot in the NFL. He can always go back to college if he wants.
Right, yeah, because someone will give him a chance. Petrino can get how many chances, Chip Kelly will certainly get a second chance.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. So why would you, you know, if you're going to have Chip as your coach, I feel like you've got to go all in. You can't be like, oh, we want to implement some parts of what you do. No, that's not how it works. It's the whole deal. And if you were going to be that way, it was a terrible hire for a head coach.
Right.
You know what I mean? If they weren't going to go all in on Chip's philosophies, it's a terrible hire. You don't want to hire someone and then micromanage everything
right.
they do.
Or then castrate them and be like, I'm sorry, that's not what we want to do.
Right,
then you shouldn't have hired them.
Right, exactly.
You got to roll with it. You got to. I completely agree. Okay, running down the other Eagles transactions, they added another running back in Chargers running back Matthews. They also added Packers cut linebacker Brad Jones. They also added another linebacker, but this time in a trade, and this was a big one. They added former Oregon linebacker Kiko Alonso of the Bills in exchange for LeSean McCoy. The Bills then gave LeSean McCoy a big contract extension, a lot of money. In Philadelphia, Alonso will most likely team with Michael Kendricks and form a pretty crazy good inside linebacker duo
if they both can stay healthy. Right.
Alonso has torn his ACL twice in the last 4 years, missed all of last season. And that's kind of a theme for the Eagles trades here.
I do kind of find it funny that a lot of fans were angry that they've gotten guys coming off of ACL injuries were the same people who were angry that they didn't sign Macklin, who has multiple ACL injuries.
Right.
Like, it's just a thing where most fans are just
thinking you talk to fit your own narrative. When you're a fan and like a diehard, you don't want to listen to, you know, you don't want someone to be level-headed. You just want everyone to be all in with you.
So, I mean, I look at it, I like what I've heard about Kiko Alonso. Hopefully he can stay healthy. Because if he can, it could be dynamic with him and
Kendricks
in the middle there for the Eagles.
I like the trade for both teams. One,
absolutely.
Because the Bills didn't really miss a step on defense without him last year.
Right.
Not to say he's not good, but they had guys to fill in.
Coach now.
Right, exactly.
And the Bills
needed a running back.
At the time, I felt like that's what the Eagles were doing too. Chip was saying, I don't need a top three running back in the NFL because in the system, I can get production. I'm not saying top three production, but I can get production out of a guy who I'm going to pay a heck of a lot less to. Now, that's not what they ended up doing. You know, they ended up paying a guy a lot of money to take that spot. Look at it. They get Kiko Alonso. They get DeMarco Murray. And they got Ryan Matthews. That doesn't happen if they just re-sign McCoy. You know, that those options wouldn't have been available. So it did kind of open some things up, even though the money-wise, you know, they end up spending the money, but they have to spend it anyway. Now, you can't just sit there grossly under the cap like you used to be able to and just bank that money.
We're going
to
talk more about NFL free agency trades and whatnot on next week's show. So we'll wrap up the NFL talk this week. We'll start next week with more Eagles discussion, leading off with the other trade that happened, which was a surprise of switching quarterbacks and rotating draft picks. So there's a lot of talk about there.
In Chip we trust. We're good.
It's where you have to be there. You can't be any other way.
Right, why not? Like, that's basically – why would you bring him in as the coach if you weren't going to let him just go all out?
And there's,
I'm all in.
There's plenty of other trades to talk about as well. And we'll dedicate all next week to the rest of the NFL offseason and dive more into the Eagles talk and touch on some of the other teams that I know our listeners are interested in. But we really need to move on to the NCAA March Madness selection show just ending, wrapping up. The brackets are done. They're talking analysis now And we're going to dive in right away. Now, I know entering it, I looked at the bracketology on ESPN, Joe Lunardi. He projected his one seed to be Kentucky, Villanova, Duke, Wisconsin. I think that's completely
exactly
right.
How it worked out, yeah.
And I haven't seen pretty much any of the brackets, so I don't know if his other stuff worked out. He's had Georgia, BYU, Colorado State, and Texas as just in. Temple, LSU, Boise State, and Ole Miss as being like playing basically the last four in. And then missing out, he had six teams, Indiana, UCLA, Miami, Florida, Old Dominion, Murray State, and UConn.
I know UCLA made it.
Okay.
So did Indiana. Indiana's a 10 seed.
Okay.
All right. So a couple – now, this was a couple hours ago. I don't know if he updated it or not. But let's pull up the bracket. Oops. Let's make this a little bit bigger here. All right. And – okay. Let's just go like this. All right, there's the bracket, if you can see that, if you're watching. I'm not sure how well you can see that. But, all right, so we know the number one seeds. Probably pretty straightforward. Was there any doubt as to who the top four were going to be, Adam?
You and I had both talked about this, you and I this morning, and you and I yesterday, Joey, about the one seeds in particular. I feel like Virginia got a raw deal. Obviously, the big talk has been about injuries, and that's a common theme throughout with a lot of these teams. You know, Virginia had a solid season. They lost at home to Duke in the regular season. You know, since then they lost Justin Anderson to a hand injury, broke his pinky. I'm sorry. While he was out recovering from that injury, he had an emergency appendectomy. So he comes back surprisingly early and plays in the last two games of the ECC tournament.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago we were like, oh man, they need to make it out of the first round just to give him a shot to play.
Right.
Wrong. He played this week. That's unbelievable.
And he played bad, to be honest. He played bad. He was not himself. He could not make a shot. But it's difficult shooting with your pinky and ring finger wrapped together on your shooting hand. But he's back. You know, if he's playing this early, by the time they really need him, which – looking at the brackets, it's now the first weekend because they have a really tough second-round game against most likely Michigan State. And we talked about how Tom Izzo in the tournament is brutal.
Somebody said, like, in college basketball, the months are, like, you know, November, December, January, February, Izzo, April. Like, his team, regardless of what you think of them in November, they're always ready to go in March. Like, it's unbelievable.
So, you think Virginia deserved a one, then?
I do. And the biggest thing, everyone's argument is, well, you know, about Duke and Virginia is Duke and Virginia did not make the conference championship. And I completely understand. They both got, quote-unquote, upset in the semifinals of the ACC tournament. Okay? But let's look at who they got upset by.
Yeah, North Carolina.
North Carolina and Notre Dame, right, who are top 20 teams. Notre Dame is a 3 seed. North Carolina is a 4 seed.
Right.
You know, in the tournament.
Right.
Whereas who did Villanova beat?
Right.
Who's the best team Villanova beat?
Probably Kansas.
I'm talking in their conference tournament.
Oh, in the conference tournament.
Providence
Georgetown
and Xavier.
Maybe?
Georgetown got upset.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
They beat Providence and Xavier, who are both 6 seeds.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who'd they beat? Wisconsin. Who'd they beat? They beat Michigan State in overtime today.
Right, and they were down 11 with 5 minutes left.
Michigan State wasn't ranked.
No.
Duke and Virginia lost to top 20 teams on a neutral floor.
I think, and this is just what I heard other people talking about, was because of the way Virginia didn't dominate towards the end of the regular season, I think they lost two out of their last 3 games maybe or something like that. Just the way it was set up with buys in the ACC tournament.
They got
like
upset by Louisville, at Louisville by 1 point.
Right. And it's Louisville. Right. Like, exactly. Like, I'm kind of surprised because you hear a lot, oh, you got to look at the whole picture. You got to look at the whole picture. Well, in my opinion, what they did here, and this is a little bit of the homework because I root for Villanova. Like, I think Nova got a one seed. But I think what happened was Wisconsin, looking at the way they seeded them, Wisconsin got – a one with – they're like 31-3, and they've had a great year. Like, don't get me wrong.
Absolutely.
But one of those three is kind of a lopsided loss at Wisconsin where they never lose to Duke. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that was early in the season, but Virginia split with Duke.
No. Virginia and Duke played once.
Oh, did they only play once? Duke sorry. Virginia. Okay. Yeah, so, you know, like, I think they talk a lot of, it's the big picture, you got to look at the whole thing. I think with Virginia, they got very short-sighted in the last 2-3 weeks.
Absolutely. They put all their eggs on how they looked the last couple weeks, which the tournament committee always says they don't do. They don't put much stock in the last 10 games.
Well,
and this and that.
And then this is the thing. In theory, because Wisconsin's the fourth-ranked number one seed,
mm-hmm.
Virginia, they don't even have them as the best number two.
No.
Do they?
Nope.
They've got Arizona. Right. Like,
they have Virginia as the
right. So
third.
They have,
right?
They have
Gonzaga
Virginia,
would be the next.
Who is ranked? Virginia
right, it goes that way.
Well, it would be Arizona would be Wisconsin.
So then Gonzaga.
Right. Gonzaga.
Then Virginia.
So, yeah, they
Virginia.
Have, they drop they,
Virginia.
They drop Virginia to number 7 overall.
Yeah.
Well,
when
maybe
they,
not. Maybe not because there's certain rules
it's
that the
weird.
Committee does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, you're right.
So
they wouldn't have matched them up with.
Right. They
anyway.
Wouldn't
have
won Virginia and Duke. Now,
right.
Normally it's just a first round or a first weekend game if they can avoid it. But they wouldn't. I don't think they won Virginia and Duke in the same
bracket.
And
I don't know where these games are at. So they may have put them closer to home as the two in the first round.
In the first round games, it doesn't matter. Duke and Virginia will most likely be at the same site, even though they're different brackets because they're just split up by quads.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Like they may have like put those games, put them in a bracket so that their first round game.
Right, but what I'm saying is which bracket you're in. Like you can be in the West bracket. And you can play your first round game in Philadelphia.
Right. I'm just saying, like,
that doesn't matter.
It doesn't happen until the
Sweet 16.
Right.
Okay. Well, all right. So you gave your take on the number one seed and who you thought maybe got screwed a little bit. Let's just quickly run down the brackets, and then we'll turn to you for a little discussion, maybe on what's your most interesting game and maybe where your upset would be. All right. Well, let's start in the Midwest with number one overall Kentucky. They're going to play the winner of Hampton, Manhattan. Then 8-9 is Cincinnati, Purdue. 5-12, there's the famous 5-12, is West Virginia, Buffalo. 4-13 is Maryland and Valparaiso. 6-11 is Butler, Texas. 3-14 is Notre Dame and, what is that?
Northeastern. Yeah.
7 is Wichita State against 10, Indiana. And 2-15 is Kansas, New Mexico State. Of those matchups, Adam, what do you think will be the most exciting for official first round game? I know second round.
Yeah,
that's so
no.
stupid.
I heard they are dropping that after this year.
Are they really?
Yeah.
What would be the most exciting matchup in that first group, and maybe who should be on upset alert?
Well, when you're looking at upset alert, I find it hard to say that an 8-9 or a 7-10 game is an upset alert. I look at those as being very
more evenly matched.
Yeah, there's a lot of parity in those games, and
like actually in terms of like spreads and things, a lot of those 9 or 10 seeds will actually be the Vegas favorite.
Absolutely.
Which is, you know, the seeding can mislead a little bit there.
You listen to a lot of experts, and ironically, I've gotten a chance to watch a lot more basketball this year than I have in years past, just from being up late at night.
funny how that works. I got to watch a lot of baseball last year.
Yeah, I feel much more well-versed in basketball right now. But as much as I've always loved Butler, they are in trouble. Texas is a team that has gotten better and better as the year goes on. They are very athletic, can get up and down the floor. The Big 12 was a loaded conference this year, and the CBS showed a stat, you know, Big 12 and Big 10 had 7 teams each. ACC had 6. I think the ACC got a raw deal. I thought Miami deserved to be in as well.
Yeah.
But the Big 12 is loaded, and Texas is very easily can win that first-round game against Butler. The other team that's very dangerous is the other Big 12 team that I'm seeing in this bracket. Well, there are a couple other Big 12 teams in this bracket, but West Virginia is a dangerous team.
Mm-hmm.
They played their last couple of games without their two best players. Juwan Statton's been out with an injury. He missed the entire Big 12 tournament and a couple of games before then. And then his backcourt mate, I can't think of his name, he got hurt in the Baylor game, the first Baylor game at the end of the regular season, when Gaithers rolled up on his ankle diving for a loose ball. Completely legitimate play, not dirty whatsoever. Just a freak accident that happens when, you know, one guy's going for a loose ball and he dives on the floor and the other guy doesn't dive on the floor and he can get rolled up on. So I think a lot of that depends on injuries. If West Virginia is healthy, West Virginia is a dangerous team. West Virginia-Kentucky game, if that ends up in the Sweet 16, could be interesting.
Don't get me wrong. It's not going to happen because Cincy's going to run into UK in that second round. And I think Kentucky's going to
beat them. Don't count out Purdue. Purdue.
But I just mean it would be really cool to see a Sweet 16 game of Bob Huggins against Cincinnati.
True.
It won't happen. Mm-hmm. Like, that would require a few upsets, but of massive proportion. But it's not like that would just be cool, a cool thing to see there. I saw on that bracket. Mm-hmm. But yeah, West Virginia. You know, like I said, Huggins can have his guys ready to go. They tend to do well when they can get on a roll in these tournaments sometimes.
And they buy in. Coming into it, I said that two of the most dangerous teams that I, as a Duke fan, I didn't want Duke to face were West Virginia and Baylor. Because of their athleticism,
right?
The way they get after it, they trap hard. The problem that West Virginia is going to run into is, first of all, obviously Maryland's a very solid team. Maryland's ranked 8th in the country this week and is a 4 seed.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know how that works. Obviously, they lost to Michigan State, but dropping them to a 4 seed, that's a tough fall.
Right, right.
The problem that West Virginia is going to have is if they do run into Kentucky, which very well could happen, Kentucky likes to get up and down the floor. And they leak out, and they will throw the ball over top of their trap and could lead to a track meet, which West Virginia probably wouldn't win.
Right, no.
But still, the athleticism in that game would make for a very interesting matchup.
Yeah, I agree. So there's some interesting ones there. You know, when you look at Buffalo, it's their first time in the tournament, you know.
Coached by Bobby Hurley.
That's right. That's right.
Dookie.
You know, so I'm sure he's prepping, you know, for their game and not watching the I Hate Christian Laettner special tonight. But, you know, it is.
Haters gonna hate.
It's gonna like there are some interesting first round games and some interesting games as you kind of get into that bracket as well. So we'll have to see. Kansas at the bottom there at 2. That's kind of, I don't know. I like Kansas only because I picked them 1 year and they won the whole thing and that won the tournament for
that one year they beat Syracuse.
I think so. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So you know like. It's been you know, but they're up and down so much. Absolutely. And that's every year under Phil.
It is every year. Up and down, and that's an interesting potential Elite Eight matchup. I don't think it will happen.
No.
But Kentucky waxed Kansas by about 40. I don't remember the final. I know they beat UCLA by 40, but they drilled Kansas early in the year as well. Notre Dame is very dangerous. Obviously, we saw what they did through the ACC
the
tournament.
Out, man.
And that's the thing, like, everyone says defense wins championships, and I'm a firm believer in that philosophy, as you well know.
When you're hitting shots from 35 feet, there's no defense going to stop that.
But offense can definitely win a game.
Yeah.
Offense can definitely win a game. You know, you don't have to be the best defensive team if you're going to shoot the lights out. And there are a couple teams in this tournament that can easily pull off some of those upsets, and I'm looking at a bunch of those 6-11 games as being examples of that.
Yep. So.
All right. Unfortunately, we don't have a ton of time, so we're just going to make this real quick with the other parts of the bracket. In the East, if you pick up one of the first round or second round games, that maybe will be more interesting than you'd expect based on seedings, what would you pick?
I think you got that 5-12 in Northern Iowa, Wyoming. Wyoming's a dangerous team. They had a couple injuries early in the year, and because of that, they lost some games, and they got healthy, and then they came back and ended up winning their conference tournament. They got some guys that can shoot. They can fill it up a little bit. Now, Northern Iowa is very good as well. But that'll be interesting. And then right next to that, I'm looking at that 4-13 game. Louisville obviously hasn't been the same since they let Chris Jones go. They lost a little bit there in the guard play, which hurts them, especially with the pressure and their style of play. Playing against Cal Irvine, who
is that the team that has the biggest guy in the
tournament? 7'6".
7'6".
Eight foot wingspan.
And he's not just like your oaf of a 7'6" guy. No. He can run. Right. He can move. He can play.
Wow.
I think his name is Muhammadu Injai or something like that.
Yeah.
But to go along with him, they got some guys that can fill it up from the outside as well. You know, that's a very dangerous 4-13 game.
Yeah.
All right, look at down south now and where your Dukies are.
I love that bracket for Duke. That to me is the weakest bracket.
Well, I mean, we're all Duke fans, really. We have no problem with Duke here. I know a lot of people do.
I love the fact that they have Georgetown as a 4 and Utah as a 5 in that bracket. Utah, just not that not impressive. I know they're ranked and everything like that, but not impressive. And the couple times I got to watch him play, now I watched him play Arizona and Oregon and, you know, some of the top teams out of the Pac-12, but just they have the DeLon Wright, who, you know, is, I guess,